This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Americans celebrated Martin Luther King Jr. yesterday. The civil rights leader who worked tirelessly for justice in the 1960s has solidified a place as a cultural icon. But a new play showcases a more intimate and accessible portrait of the man. Martin Luther King, an Interpretation, begins a six-month residency at the Arts Center in Carrboro. Ira Knight is the writer and the director behind the one-man play, and he joins me in the studio. Ira, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Thank you for having us.
Also with us is John Ivey, an actor who plays King in the play. Hello, John.
Hello, Frank.
Let me start with you, Ira, and talk about this play and sort of what's the idea behind it and how this idea came to you.
Okay, the main thing is, one thing about Dr. King, he is such an icon that he's almost become mythical and fictional. Almost like in October, we look at pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns and November turkeys and December Santa Claus and January and February Martin Luther King, and then we shelve him away. But he is a human being, and he has so much more to offer, to provoke thought, to inspire us. And I really wanted to capture the man, the human part of him.
Why? What's the value in that?
The actual impetus is I was listening to his final speech in Memphis. And prior to that, I really respected Dr. King. But at that point, I was a father. I had children. And when I listened to that speech, it really resonated with me in the sense of knowing that pretty soon I'm going to die or be killed. And how would I feel knowing that I would have to leave the children that I love and cherish? And that really resonated with me, and I wanted to convey that to the audience.
We have a clip from that speech. I've been to the mountaintop.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land.
Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., I've been to the mountaintop. An iconic speech, Ira Knight, who has written a one-man play that looks at the more human side of Martin Luther King, Jr. And, of course, that speech, as much as any, cemented his place as an icon and a godlike figure. I mean, a man who could face death, and none of us can do that. I mean, that's the sort of the deified Martin Luther King, right, if you will. So when we give this personal portrait, I guess there's a man that we can identify with in our foibles and in our weaknesses and our more vulnerable moments.
Absolutely. And it's not a man for what happened 50 years ago that we can't relate. It has no relation to what we're doing in 2017. It's very relatable as a human being and the human experience.
To set the context for us, how is this play created? Where is Martin Luther King Jr. when this play starts?
The setting for the play is actually the evening of April 4th, 1968, moments before he is to be assassinated. And in his moments, not knowing that they're actual final moments, but contemplating his life, reflecting, and working through some things.
And you would talk about some of those things. Those are some of the things, these more human ideas, concerns, and fears, really, that he worked with. How did you come to sort of know these and try to embody them in this story?
I actually started in looking at the mirror, just thinking, how would I feel as a father, knowing once again that my time is nearly up, and drawing on that experience and also drawing on the things that are common. It's not like, once again, he's deified and an icon only, but he is a human being, and we're all human. We have pain, we have isolation, we have fears, we have hopes, aspirations, all of that, and that's common to every human being.
Well, I want to bring John Ivey back into the conversation now. I was going to do a scene for us a little bit, and maybe, John, I can ask you to set this up for us.
Well, this is when I first get on stage. I first walk on stage, and I have some props with me. And I just, I begin with, so you You seem to have caught me in the middle of some things. Trying to work through some things, figure some things out. Now, I know I don't look or sound like what you expected, but hey, television, newspapers, and magazines can work wonders. However, having been raised in the South, I don't want to be rude. There'll be no speeches. There'll be no preaching. There'll be no sermons. In fact, there'll none of the Martin Luther King Jr. that you've seen on television. As long as we understand that, you are more than welcome to stay. As I said, I'm trying to work through some things. Can we talk? Can we really talk? I said earlier I'm trying to work through some things, but it's different when you're trying to move people, move masses of people, to inspire, to encourage, to uplift the downtrodden. It has a different cadence, different melody to it. And when I think back, to the early years, to the beginning, to the riots, the boycotts, the marches, the speeches, they bring back things. They bring back some really memorable occasions. And the people, the dedication, the commitment, the sacrifices. But I don't want to talk about any of those things today. Today, I want to be able to talk to you in plain English, person to person, peer to peer, human being to human being. Can we do that? So that's the opening.
I wonder what it's like for you as an actor, John, because again, you know, Martin Luther King is a photograph. He is a bigger than life figure who and a bust on a mantle who gets dusted off, you know, once a year. What do you do as an actor to break through all of that in your own mind and become the human being who is Martin Luther King?
Frank, for me, because of my age and where I am in the stream of time and have been, Martin Luther King was a real instrument for me, an instrument of hope and of what things could be. I was 12 years old at the Walk on Washington, so the Have a Dream speech. But when I think back, you know, to my life, Frank, where I was raised, what kinds of things were going on. There were actually things going on in my life that led me to understand prior to that. I was actually, when he mentions, you know, that in his speech that he'd like to have a dream where his four young children will grow up to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Fortunately, where I was, those kind of things were happening.
You were in Connecticut, right?
Yes, yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
And in fact, in high school, when Dr. King was assassinated, and that was a kind of moment of awakening for you. Maybe you can tell us that story.
Well, it was, and I can remember the day. At that time, African-Americans, we were Negroes at that time. And an announcement was made for all the Negro students to come to the auditorium. Now, I went to a predominantly white school, so there were not a great deal of us. And one of the seniors got on stage and said, "They killed our leader." Well, the reaction we had was not, okay, kill our white classmates or our teachers. So what we did, we started a club. It was called the African Culture Club. That was our initial reaction to things. And along with, there were some community things going on that we got involved in.
You, Ira Knight, let me ask you again about creating this program and this play that examines the human side. It also examines some of the more uncomfortable parts of Martin Luther King's story, his marital infidelity, in which you take on in this play.
Right, absolutely. And it, not to justify or provide an excuse, but actually a background and some additional context, because ordinarily when you hear about it, it's done in such a salacious way. It's either evil or good man, but there's a whole lot of gray in between for all of us. None of us are all of any single way, and I really wanted to just capture that as a human being.
Well, I think the power in that is what John Ivey just told us, was certainly a story that was repeated over and over across this country, about the power of a figure who you didn't know personally. You didn't know, and there may have been whispers about some of this other behavior, but the fact is he was a bigger-than-life figure who had that kind of an impact and yet could be a human being, as human as the rest of us. And I think that's just the lesson for all of us, that you can be both, a powerful figure that has an impact on the imagination, and feet of clay. But what about putting this together? I mean, were there moments for you where you thought, well, no, I can't do this. This is a saint. I can't give him feet of clay.
Well, I actually didn't approach him as a saint. I never had that idea because, knowing that we are all human, and I guess I'm in touch with my humanness, and we all have our challenges or issues. It may not be fidelity. It may not be drugs. But we all have our weaknesses. And I really wanted to convey that in another way, that not just we're not looking for Martin Luther King to solve all of our problems. The onus is on each of us individually to think about what can we do to make our community, this world, a better place, not all of us, but each of us.
You also catch Dr. King at a moment when he's concerned about and wondering about his future in this movement that he did so much to propel, and he would certainly tell you he didn't start the movement, but he helped propel the movement, and now facing the possibility of obsolescence, considered far too conservative for a movement that had really accelerated throughout the 60s. Again, deep concerns that he's facing. Talk about some of those concerns that he had.
Well, one of the things is when you talk about the obsolescence, he's in a position where even in his camp, within his camp, everyone is not pulling for him. And to have to deal and get up every day to confront that challenge of, what do? I know that I have enemies sitting at the table, eating with me, smiling with me, acting as a friend. How do I deal with that? And it's important that we all, no matter who we are, everyone is not going to like us. And there are challenges that we each have to deal with. And once again, trying to drive us towards an introspective look at ourselves and what can we do.
And challenges throughout the movement in the entire period from when Dr. King began in the 1950s through that, all of those robust exchanges and conflicts within the movement that had to be navigated. And I think one of the things that gets glossed over and not properly understood, I mean, there might be a feeling if you started studying that portion of the civil rights movement today, you think, well, everybody's in lockstep. They locked arms. We all agreed and we're moving forward and we all know the strategy and we all know the outcome. And we all have the same goals. That wasn't true back at 1954 and 55, arguments about how quickly to go and how slowly and whether to accommodate and whether to resist. I think it's instructive too, John Ivey. And for you, let me ask you the question, as somebody who then forms a club in high school in the aftermath of Dr. King's assassination, plotting strategy. How do you do this? And this was a robust conversation, as I said, for decades. What were your conversations like among your group?
Well, for us, when we heard about some of the things that were transpiring, Frank, throughout the rest of the country, since I've been here, and of course what we saw then, wow, is that going to help people live his dream? Is that going to help people right some of the wrongs that he tried to correct? We knew that was not the case, again, just based on what was going on in our own particular environment. So our club was for everyone. It was not just for African Americans, but it was for anybody in the school who felt that if change was going to come, it was going to be a combination of all of us in all of our efforts, despite one's nationality or color.
And that was interesting because in that moment, Ira Knight, of course, there was some violence in the streets, but I think more significantly, the Black nationalist movement gets gets going, and it is a decidedly separatist movement that says we have to find out who we are before we can reengage in this way, and also provide for ourselves, as the Black Panthers did with breakfast programs, etc. So I'm wondering where we are now, because these cycles and questions about how we assimilate, how we integrate, and to what extent we have to remind ourselves who we are among ourselves, that you think is in play today, and the relevance of Dr. King in that very important conversation.
And when you mentioned the Black nationalists and the extremes, one of my next pieces, not to go too far into it, is actually examining part of that in terms of an interpretation of what many consider to be his counterpart, which would be actually Malcolm X. And so I'm actually working on a piece on that. So it's not, once again, not either or. Black or white,
no,
shades of
Malcolm
gray,
right? X was certainly coming to understand the power of Dr. King's movement, and King was certainly beginning to understand the value of where of Malcolm X's authority and some of his statements. So they were very, very much coming together, which may account for the fact that they didn't survive as long as they might. But let me ask you now what you think is the takeaway. I know you've run this program a little bit. We're going to get a full run that begins at the Arts Center very soon now, but you started in November. What kind of response are you getting?
It's been I've heard phrases such as breathtaking. I never really saw the man in this way. I've seen a lot of Kings, but it was never brought to me in a way that I can relate to it. And so it's been very enthusiastic, very reflective, and people are getting, the audience has been getting the feeling that I got when I listened to that speech. We have been able to convey that to the audience, and in that we have success.
John Ivey, let me ask you, when you embody this figure, obviously this is a powerful historical figure, and we think we know a lot about him already. It's just part of the problem, I suppose, when you get up on stage. But to what extent are you sort of hoping to bring this conversation into the 21st century? How is it relevant today and not a period piece? And
what we're hoping, Frank, and based on some of the comments that Ira shared with you, for us, we've said, wow, this is something that needs to be heard. But not just something that, you know, I need to be on stage and doing this, but can it cause and create opportunities for dialogue, Frank? Can it help people now maybe look more introspectively at King and what he was really trying to do, looking at where we are now, how far you may be as an individual or we may be as a society, to revisit some of those things? So this opportunity gives us maybe a stepping stone into that.
Ira, what did you do to keep this from becoming just a period piece, and sort of how do you integrate in your thoughts movements that Dr. King never experienced, like Black Lives Matter?
Well, it was really not in preventing it from becoming a period piece, tapping into, once again, the human experience. Humans have, throughout history, it's not we're a different human now than we were 50 years ago or 500 years ago. And tapping into something like that, as Emerson would say, you're tapping into something that's timeless. And it's no, there are no better men then than there are today. And just that whole spirit and essence of it.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. The play, Martin Luther King, An Interpretation, begins a six-month residency at the Arts Center in Carrboro. The formal beginning is January 28th, 8 o'clock. We've got the details at our website. Ira Knight is the writer and director behind the one-man play. John Ivey is the actor. Gentlemen, thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
As always, you can find the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, how a sentence that came to an author, Nancy Peacock, on a morning walk inspired her latest novel. Stay tuned.